Hey guys, welcome back to the All In Podcast presented by the All In Network. One of the co-hosts, Mike Badzik, joined like I am every episode by my guy Eli Cooper. What's up, man?
Not much, man. As you guys can see, we're getting fancy with it. New mic in the building. Yep. Trying, you know, get the audio sounding crystal clear for those of you tuning in on Apple or Spotify. So not bad, not bad. New shirt for the pod. Legalized being black.
Yes, sir. So, yeah, we're excited. You guys got the new equipment. Mine's going to be coming in here soon. And if you're watching on YouTube for this segment, you can see we've got a third screen. Todd Fetzko. Todd on the road is back with us.
Back on the road as always, guys. Glad to be here.
Listen, arguably my favorite segment of this show, Todd on the road.
That's right.
One of our best guests. One of these times we'll get you sitting in a room somewhere. Probably won't be as good, though.
You're right. You know, this keeps me on my toes.
So Todd's with us. We're going to talk some hoops for a little bit here. Talk about, you know, the NBA released the schedule for the kickback restart. So we're going to talk about the remaining games, see if we have any prediction changes from the last time we talked and some matchups that we're excited about. And then after we're done talking NBA, Todd's going to leave us and we're going to be joined by Dan Thiel. And we're going to talk about baseball coming back and everything going on with that and do some predictions for that. So we're excited about that too. Also, if you guys haven't checked out the Reign and Bliss podcast yet, make sure you're checking that out. Same YouTube channel, All In with Reign and Bliss on Apple, Spotify, Google Podcasts. Check out their Twitter and make sure you're checking out our website, allinnetwork.net, for some articles. Eli's doing a new series with NBA stuff where he's redrafting all of the draft classes. So you just did 2010, right? And now you're going to keep going here all the way to 2019.
Yeah, so just in 2010, head over to allinnetwork.net to see who went number one out of, for if you need a refresher, that was the John Wall, Paul George, Boogie Cousins draft class, to name a few. So I'll be basically doing all the ones from this decade, 2010 up through 2019.
Yeah, pretty cool stuff. So I also just posted my National League preview for baseball coming back. My American League, I posted that on Thursday. My American League preview is going to be up tomorrow. Just about through with that. I'm working on the last division there. So we're excited about some stuff going on with the website too. But let's get into some basketball while we've got Todd here. So the NBA released the schedule. They had a big schedule premiere on ESPN. Pretty cool. They had Jalen Rose and Jay Williams and Paul Pierce, and hosted by Maria Taylor. They kind of went through the schedule. So it's 8 games for each team. They released all of those games, the schedule. Some of the days are going to have like 4 or 5 games, which is going to be pretty dope. But there are some big matchups leading up to the playoffs in these last 8 games. So we're just going to talk about some matchups we're excited for. Maybe we'll go around and each name a couple. Todd, what's the first one you're looking at and most excited about?
Well, the first one that really popped off the page for me was the first LA versus LA game. I think that's going to be a great feeling to kind of come back and watch that. But that's a pretty obvious one. I think the next one that really got my brain going was the Memphis versus the Pelicans. I think that's like a little one of the later ones. That could be, that's going to be gigantic for seeding, and we get to see Ja versus Zion again.
Yeah, so that's August 1st at 6:30. So that must be a day where there's going to be a whole bunch of games, because that's a 6:30 start time. So that's going to be an important game. What games are you looking at, Eli?
So, yeah, Todd took my first one at, with the Battle of L.A. How brilliant is the NBA? They give us the Battle of L.A. on the first night in the primetime slot. So we get to see where those two teams, the top two contenders really are at coming off of this right away. And then also Jazz Pelicans that same, earlier that night. And it kind of goes back to what I said about my pick for the AC was the Pelicans, because I feel that the NBA wants Zion in the playoffs. Mm-hmm. Well, he's the very first game that they're coming back with is Zion against the Jazz. So that one stuck out to me, is that they put Zion on primetime. Another reason to watch out for my Pelicans coming in at the 8th seed. I'm going to adopt them a little bit for these last 8 games. And then one that stuck out for me also on August 1st was Jazz and Thunder. I think potential 4-5 matchup there, so we get a little bit of a a taste on what that potential first round series may look like as well. So I thought that one was intriguing with those two teams.
Yeah, so those are probably the big ones. The Lakers-Clippers one is just so cool. Like, first night back, and it's and you know, the cool thing is, too, normally these Lakers-Clippers games, we have to wait till, like, 10:30 sometimes for tip-off, or we have to wait till 10 o'clock. But everything's in Orlando, so tip-off's going to be at 9, which is really cool. A lot of these games, you know, the latest tip-offs are going to be at, really, 9 o'clock. So that's kind of a dream for – the schedule makers in the NBA. You don't have to deal with the Western time zones. Absolutely. Yeah, there's a couple potential ones. I will say the Lakers second game back, I believe second game back is against Toronto. Possible finals preview right there. I'm excited to see that. We've got Celtics Bucks on the menu. That's July 31st. So that'll be what, the second day back. That'll be kind of the prime time game. Well, actually, that's a 6:30 start. So it's the second day back, arguably, is just as good as the first day back when you have – so the first day back is what Eli said, Jazz Pelicans at 6:30 and then Lakers Clippers at 9. The second day back, you've got Grizzlies Trailblazers. So they're fighting for that 8 spot. That's a potential – that's a potential 8-9 play-in tournament game is right there. And if the Blazers win, they're going to get a game. They're almost – you know, it'd be tough to imagine that they fall to more than 4 games back if they get that off the bat. And then they follow that up. So it's a triple header, which is just awesome in itself. But and then you follow that. That's at 4. You follow that with Celtics-Bucks at 6:30, potential Eastern Conference Finals preview. A lot of guys have the Celtics in their Eastern Conference Finals. I do not, but a lot of people do. They're young. So I'm interested to see how they come back off the break. And then they follow that with Rockets-Mavs at 9, which is, you know, they're the 6 and 7 seed right now, but we know these 8 games, seeding could change. That could potentially be a first round matchup. The Rockets have the ability to jump all the way up really to 3 or 4. So they're interesting just because they have James Harden and Luka, who kind of play similar games, you know, in their own right. Obviously Harden does a little bit better than Luka does right now, but they're a similar type style. So if you're into that type of ISO ball, those are two of the best at it, so that'd be a good matchup on the first night back. The one I'm most excited about, is Lakers Raptors. I think that's the finals preview. I don't know. I actually changed my pick, Todd. I went from Clippers. I'm back on the Lakers now. So that's my Any nice. Other ones? Any other ones? Like maybe later.
One I was thinking too is the getting the Celtics and the Raptors back. I think that's going to be, you know, just whatever. That's going to be an elite matchup. I want to see that and just. The Mavs, I think we got to keep a close eye on the Mavs. Maybe they can make a push here and change their seating a little bit too. I think that's I've heard a lot of people kind of high on the Mavs right now. And I think that, you know, if they can get some momentum there, they could definitely move up and make some noise if they, you know, don't have to play the Clippers in the first round.
Another one I want to point out, August 6th, Heat and Bucks. That matchup intrigues me because I want to see how the Heat match up with the Bucks. And these are all going to be kind of like playoff games because there's all playoff potential teams, you know, trying to get ready for the playoffs. So that one's going to be intriguing to me. Possible second round matchup, depending on where the Heat, you know, finish up in their seeding. I think the Heat, like defensively, I think the Heat can give the Bucks problems. So I'm interested to see how that matchup goes too.
Yeah, that'll be a really good second round matchup if we get it, assuming that both of those teams take care of business in the first round. So then if you look at the last day of games, Miami and Indiana is the game on the last day. That's, you know, there's a good chance that's a first round matchup in itself. So it's almost like a, you know, if the seeding can't change, it's almost like a scrimmage warm up leading into the first round series in the playoffs, which would be those same teams. You also have Philly, Houston, and then the day before the last game, you have, who do we have here? Anybody good? Well, you know, Pelicans and Magic, and then all of those teams who are fighting for that 8 spot in the West, so Portland, Sacramento, Memphis, New Orleans, Phoenix, and the Spurs are all in action on that August 13th, and that'll be the last game for all of them. So that'll be like the big moving day for that matchup. So kind of sticking with that then and those teams fighting for that 8 spot. The last time we had a pod with Todd, we did our predictions for the 8 seed. I stuck with the Grizzlies to keep it. Eli was on the Pelicans. And I think Todd was on the Blazers, right?
That's
at
right.
The time, at the time you had the Blazers. So then looking at the looking at the schedule now, do you want to change your mind about anything?
I think ultimately the Grizzlies are going to end up with that 8 seed. I think like you brought up last time, you know, we on paper we always loved the Blazers, but they really weren't, you know, I mean, they didn't play great this year, and I'm high. I just think high on the Grizz right now. Ja coming back. I love that team. I think probably if I'm going to change anything, that'd be the one thing I'd change. Probably the Grizzlies do end up getting that.
Sticking with the Pelly Scoop?
Yeah. I mean, I'm looking at their schedule, and really only the first two games really scare me. I mean, the Jazz are a beatable team, in my opinion, for them. Mm-hmm. And then the Clippers. Is their second game. So, and then after that, they're really playing the teams that they need to beat to get in. They have the Grizzlies, Kings, they play the Wizards, and then Spurs, Kings again, and then the Magic. So these are all, you know, other than the Jazz and the Clippers, every other team that they're playing against is fighting for a playoff spot just like them. So they didn't draw any of the top tier teams in their schedule. Yeah. So I like the Pelicans' draw here. So I'm going to say
the Pelicans have the weakest 8-game slate here. I think they're the only team who's, you know, their 8 opponents, their cumulative win record is below 500. They're the only team because, you know, these are all close to playoff teams. So everyone else has some enough winning teams sprinkled in to where the records are above 500. The Pelicans are the only ones. So do you think the NBA is doing this on purpose? Do they want Zion in that bad?
I mean, look at the Grizzlies' schedule. The Grizzlies start off with the Blazers, which is the very next team below them. And then they have Spurs, Pelicans, Jazz. And then it gets tough. They get the Thunder, Raptors, Celtics, and Bucks to end it. Like, their last four games are against top four seeds in both sides of the conference. And it's just like, I mean, you can't say that they didn't set this up nicely for the Pelicans.
No doubt. And honestly, I can't blame the NBA if they do, you know?
Yeah, he's blockbuster. So here's a team that we did not talk about last time we did this. And I don't know if they're my pick, but I think the Kings could actually do it. You know, the Kings were 3-1 this year against the Grizzlies. They have the same record as the Blazers, the Pelicans, all these other teams. You know, last year they were a surprise team that didn't quite make the playoffs, but they actually came on pretty well towards the end of the year. They were pretty bad at the beginning of the year, but they came on pretty well. They've got, you know, arguably, if you matched up their firepower with anybody else in that group, other than, you know, they're not going to match up with Dame, obviously, and CJ. But, you know, De'Aaron Fox, Buddy Hield, Bogdanovich, Marvin Bagley's played really well. Like, they have guys – who can do it. And Luke Walton, coach, I don't think he's the best coach, but he's coached in big games, right? He studied under Steve Kerr. He played with Kobe and under Phil Jackson. That might matter. So let's look at the Kings schedule coming out. So they've got the Spurs, and let's see, who else? Orlando is next. Dallas. So Dallas is the 7th seed. It's not that tough. And then they play New Orleans. Then they play Brooklyn. So we're, you know, halfway through this, they haven't played anybody tough yet or anybody that's, you know, you could chalk up as an L on their record sheet. They have Houston then, and then they end with New Orleans again, and then they end with the Lakers. So that might be the game where they have the opportunity. But those first 7 games they have to play are not tough. I mean, the Rockets are going to be a tough matchup, but they could beat any of those other teams probably. I wouldn't be surprised if they were able to go at least 5-3. And if they go 5-3, they're probably going to be within the 4 games. Does anybody else think the Kings have a chance?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think it really could come down to their 2 matchups with the Pelicans, like you said, because, you know, those are the 2 teams that I think that we've evaluated so far that have the weakest – schedules here, so, and they play each other twice, so it could end up coming out to, you know, those 2 games.
Right, and ultimately the thing is we have no idea what a lot of these guys are going to look like when we come back. So, I wouldn't put it past anybody. That's a nice young core. They got shooting and some ball handling, and I think that you know, like we just don't know yet. So in this environment, I can see them thriving, but you know, it's still the Kings. So I wouldn't put too much hope on it.
Yeah. But I think I'm definitely off of Phoenix, right? I don't think Phoenix is a real contender here. And then the Spurs, who I brought up the Spurs last time, but LaMarcus is going to be out and, mm-hmm. you know,
killer.
Their core is not that great. You know, Pop, it makes a difference, I think, but I think if I had to rank these teams, so I'm probably still going to stick with the Grizzlies. Just because even if, you know, it's just so hard because even if they finish, I don't think that they're going to lose 3.5 games to any of these teams. Or I really would have to lose 4 games since they're all playing the same number of games here. So I don't think they're going to lose 4 games in 8 in the standings to any of these teams. And I think it's just going to be really hard to beat them twice in a row in a neutral court for any of these teams because they're all about the same. You know, this is basically would be like a 4-5 matchup in a normal type of playoffs where both of the teams are pretty similar. No real big advantage. I think Portland would be the ones where you look the most and say, well, if they got that 9 spot, they might be the ones who you think, okay, well, they could beat them twice in a row because of the, you know, Dame and CJ and Nurkic factor. Mm-hmm. But I don't know if they're going to get that spot. Their schedule's a lot tougher than the New Orleans and Sacramento.
True. That's just a huge advantage. And, you know, good for them. Got that 8 seed.
Yeah. So I would probably – if I had to rank them, I'd probably go Memphis, New Orleans, Sacramento, Portland, San Antonio, Phoenix. Agreed?
I'd be close, but I'd have Pelicans over Memphis, but
– yeah.
Other than that, same order.
Yeah.
That sounds right.
Okay, so last thing we'll talk about NBA today, just kind of like the way that these guys are coming back and the long break they've had, and now, you know, they're going to play 8 games in basically 2 weeks and then go straight into like a normal playoffs. So we'll do East and West. So in the West, actually, let's start with the East then. In the East, really, I think you could probably say you have 5 real contenders to win the East, maybe Milwaukee, Toronto, Boston, Philly, and you could probably throw Miami in there. I just don't think you can count them out completely, where everybody mm-hmm. else is probably a long shot. So out of those 5, who do you think the break plus this scheduling format, you know, if anybody's going to get an advantage from this, who's the team? We'll start with Todd.
So, for me, I think the number one team that this break has helped the most would be the 76ers, just because they got Simmons coming back. Mm. You know, if he's out for the last half of the season, you know, that kills him in the standings. And I think the fact that he's coming back healthy and they're still a pretty, you know, young core, I think that, you know, like I said, if they come back strong, Embiid's in shape, it looks like maybe, and they can really shake things up. So, I think the Sixers, just because the, you know, Ben Simmons coming back.
Yeah, the Embiid would be the only thing that would make me stray away from saying that the Sixers would benefit from this, because who knows what he's been eating over the last 3 months. So, and he apparently like just got his license. So I, you know, I don't really know where his head's at right now, but at least he's you know healthy, I guess. His conditioning would be the issue, I guess, mm-hmm. In that situation for the Sixers. So, yeah, I would agree with Todd. I would say the layoff, just because even if Embiid is, like, a little bit out of shape, at least he's healthy. Like, most of the time we're going into the playoffs with him banged up. And it also gave Ben Simmons the opportunity to get healthy too. So, you know, maybe they make a little push to improve their seeding here in the last 8 games. Because I'd really like to see them get to the 4 or 5 seed, because I think they match up better with like the Pacers in the first round. If they can somehow, you know, get the Pacers in the first round, I wouldn't love a Heat matchup, but I would be banking that the Heat maybe drop out, something like that. But really, because I'd want to see the Bucks in the second round and not the Raptors if I was the Sixers. So because that's who you're designed to play against. So if they can somehow land in that range. I think that would be good for them. So I think this layoff helped because I think with the format, like their team is kind of structured to be very elite defensively. So that could really help them. And, you know, since most teams are coming back without a ton of chemistry, they could be disruptive, you know, defensively, and that could help maybe win them some games to improve their seeding.
Yeah, so here's the thing about the Sixers, though, is they're so bad on the road.
Yeah.
And now I don't know.
That's the thing.
Yeah, and I don't know if this is a good thing or a bad thing for them in this environment because, you know, they're not really on the road, whereas they're not in a road arena with away fans, but they're not at their home court. So I don't know if that record is a product of them being not in their home court or if it's a product of the road fans. If it's a product of not being on their home court, then this could bode really bad for them, this format where they're not, you know, when they're all in Orlando. I mean, I think they only won like two games on the road pretty much all year. Like it was really bad. So I would so this is kind of the other question. And I think it lends more of a hand more clearly in the Western conferences, you know, does it favor the old guys who need a break and get some rest, or does it favor the young guys who are going to be ready to roll as soon as it kicks back up and don't need a couple games to get going? So I would say in the East that it favors Toronto because of the break it allows some of these older guys, and they had guys on injury too. I mean, Kyle Lowry was banged up all year. Marcus Gasol is going to be coming back. Serge Ibaka was banged up. OG Anunoby, same thing. So they had a lot of guys banged up. And I talk about how everything always helps the Raptors and how everything is always perfectly set up for them. So, you know, on every episode, but I think it does help them. So I'll go with Toronto because of that. So then as we talk about the West, then that's pretty much the main question, because I think we all are kind of saying Lakers and Clippers are the only two here. You know, you could throw in the Rockets if you want to go that way. And maybe we include them in that conversation. But who do you think this break and the format helps more? Is it Lakers or is it Clippers? And then kind of is it helping the older guys, which would be the Lakers probably, or the younger guys in the Clippers? What do you think, Coop?
Well, I would say the break benefits the older guys getting the rest. Mm-hmm. However, I think the format and how many, like pretty much how many games these guys are going to be playing in a short period of time benefits the young guys, because they will, you know what I mean, they'll recoup faster than the older guys will, as far as, you know, energy and things like that. And most of these guys just got done playing AAU like 2 or 3 years ago, so they're used to this. So
yeah, true.
You know, I think the format benefits the younger players, but the break, like LeBron has 3 months of fresh legs coming into this. Like you can't tell me that doesn't bode well for him.
Right.
You know, so for older guys, the break is good. Younger guys benefit from the condensed mini games in short period of time.
See, so I've been really racking my brain.
Go ahead, Todd.
I've been racking my brain a lot. Just like, does this help? Like the format necessarily, like, is it going to be worse to be older or younger? Just from the sense that these are all going to be high leverage games from the get go. As soon as we get back, and I, you know, a lot of these young teams, we talked about the Kings or even the Memphis and Pelis, like playing what's going to feel like a playoff game every night. Is that going to affect their play? You know, especially coming off. And I think that maybe the older teams could handle this better, have a better system, you know, just understanding, been through high leverage situations before, and maybe that can help them. But I think that this format and the break, I'm going to say, helps the Lakers. And I kind of hit on this on a previous podcast. I think the Lakers were hitting on all cylinders as a team. I think they have great chemistry. And I think that from some reports that they've been able to, you know, been practicing for a while at this, you know, private mansion out there.
Oh, yeah, mansion in LA. Yeah, that's pretty cool.
So I think that they'll be ready to play. I think their chemistry is going to be better as soon as they, you know, hit the court, come back in a short amount of time. I think that overall the Clippers are just, you know, added some new pieces, and I think that it's still going to be, you know, a dogfight. But I think that overall this probably – I think LeBron can carry the load for this long, especially like Coop said, a three-month break we're going to have. I think he's going to be, you know, hell on wheels coming back.
So you think it helps the Lakers more?
Yeah.
So I think it helps the Lakers more too, but it is a good point that it is going to take the older teams, you know, just to get the legs under you. I think that is going to be a legitimate thing. And that is probably a good argument for why the Pelicans are going to end up in that 9 spot not necessarily the eight spot, but rather the nine spot compared to teams like the Spurs and the Blazers. You know, they're going to be able to get going quicker, you know, depending on the shape that some of these guys are in Zion and whatnot. But, you know, I think that eight games, because, you know, in reality, the Lakers are pretty close to having the one seed locked up.
Yeah.
Right. They're going to get that one seed. So, you know, you have eight games to kind of get going, and then the first round is going to be against whoever survives the 8-9 matchup. I don't think that that's going to be much of a series. And then, you know, you have the second round, which could be Thunder and Jazz, but me and Coop on our last podcast, we had the Lakers winning that round. I think I had them in five and you had them in four. So there isn't going to be much competition there. But I think by that point where they're playing the Clippers, they're going to be into gear, right? Like, I mean, how many games to start a regular season, how many games at the beginning of the year do we say it normally takes teams to, like, start hitting their stride? I mean, how many is it? Is it 20 games? Is it 15 games? I don't think it's more than 20. And, you know, you think if they have eight to end the regular season here and then at least eight in the first two rounds of the playoffs, maybe one or two more, well, that's 16 games at a minimum. I think by then the Lakers would be hitting their stride. But you could also make the argument for the Clippers. They have more health issues. You know, they're a younger team, but they have more health issues than the Lakers with Kawhi and Paul George, even Lou Will. Pat Beff has had injuries. So they might need the time more than the Lakers do.
Yeah.
Well, and one other thing we got to talk about is, you know, the Avery Bradley is officially not going to show up to Orlando. And then, you know, Lou Will is apparently on the fence as well. So, I mean, that's two things that I'm thinking of. That really shakes the team up, both those teams, especially if Lou Will were to not participate.
Yeah, but Bradley hurts. I mean, I think Bradley hurts, I mean, pretty much just as bad as Lou Will does. Like, when you talk about – because he's a – offensively the last couple of years has been pretty bad since he left Boston. But, you know, still defensively he does a really nice job. I don't know. I'm interested to see who they replace him with. Mm-hmm. You know, is it JR? Is it Alonzo Trier?
Oh, that's my fingers crossed. I think if they get him, that'd be great. Alonzo Trier. I like his game a lot. Yeah. But, like, people, I don't know. Like, I've heard things from the media all week kind of that there's not going to be that big of a drop-off between what JR could give him and what Avery Bradley was doing. And I just think that's patently false. Like, I agree. I think Avery Bradley, especially matchup-wise, if you're going against the point guards, if they did run into the Blazers or – you know, somebody else, even the Rockets maybe, like, you know, matching up with point guards is tough. And I think losing that threat is – I think that could definitely come back to hurt him in a game or so.
Yeah, absolutely. Like, I think people aren't realizing enough how big the Avery Bradley loss is going to be because they don't really have another, like, elite point guard defender. Mm-hmm. Rondo's a good – Rondo. Yeah, like, Rondo's – I guess serviceable, but, like, you don't really want to start him with LeBron, and you also – really don't want him guarding elite point guards night in and night out. That's what you have Avery Bradley for. And I guess that's going to maybe fall to Danny Green now, I guess.
Caruso.
Yeah. So, but you don't love that as nearly as much defensively as you would Avery Bradley. So that's a big loss for them. I think Lou Will shows up because, like, when else is he going to have this kind of an opportunity to win a championship? So I think he has to.
Yeah.
I think he has to go.
That's like, that's like the Clippers back on the Chris Paul Clippers with the Donald Sterling thing. Like, they didn't want to show up, but they're like, listen, we don't get this many opportunities to win championships. Like, we should show up here. Yeah. But the Avery Bradley, like, Stephen A. Smith was like, J.R. Smith does everything better than Avery Bradley. Like,
no, he does not.
What are you talking about? Like, did you watch him this year?
Yeah, come on. Defensively, like, there's not a lot of players in the league that are better than Avery Bradley, let alone J.R. Smith. Like, come on, man.
And if he did do that thing, he wouldn't be a free agent right now.
Yeah, exactly. Like, that doesn't even make sense to say.
So, yeah. So, that is going to be the big loss, though, for the Lakers. And that does matter. That's pretty much all the basketball stuff we had to talk about today. Any other thoughts, Todd, about everything?
Well, I just think – I don't know. I am just since the official announcement of basketball coming back, this is probably the most pessimistic I've been about it coming back because of the rates in Florida and just across the country as a whole. And we saw, you know, players getting tested this week. I believe it was about 5%, so a little less than national average. But I don't know. I just – it really, really worries me that they get in there and we're maybe, you know, in the first round, second round, something.
Yeah.
I have my hopes. I'm still – but I'm more worried than I was just, you know, a week ago or so.
Got it, Coop.
Agreed. So, Karen, put your mask on.
So basketball. Well, Florida, yeah, and like that's the thing. Like they're in Orlando, and like at this point, like I don't know if the bubble thing actually makes as much sense. Like baseball is going to come back, and we're going to talk about baseball here in a little bit here, but they're going to play in their home ballparks, and that's what the soccer leagues are doing in England and Germany and Italy. They're playing in their home stadiums. That actually might make more sense now. Kind of in hindsight, looking back on how this is going to go, than the bubble does, because like if there's an outbreak in the bubble, that could be really bad. And we've seen these rates in Florida. Now there is a lot of studies with these cases in Florida where like the cases are up, but it looks like a lot of these are more mild. So I don't know if there's like, because of the weather, there's some kind of different strain or something or a mutation. So I don't know if that matters or if they're going to be considering that, but yeah, like it's certainly alarming. And it seems like these southern states, the ones who reopened possibly prematurely, are getting hit the hardest. And Florida was really one of the first ones. Not good.
Not good. So we'll see.
Yeah. So, okay. Well, thank you to Todd for joining us to talk some hoops. Enjoy your road trip, man.
Thank you, guys. A pleasure as always. Always happy to be here.
Yes, sir. All right. We'll talk to you soon, man.
All right, guys. I'll see you later.
Hey guys, we're taking a quick break. Before we bring in Dan Thiel to talk about some baseball, we wanted to mention some stuff we got going on at the All In Network. Make sure you check out allinnetwork.net to see our latest articles we've posted. I posted our baseball previews with baseball coming back, and Eli is doing redrafts from every draft this decade where he redrafts the entire first round, 1 through 30. So that's really cool. We're excited about that. Make sure you're also checking out the Rain and Bliss podcast. And subscribing to their feed. They're getting better every episode, and those episodes are really funny. We did a joint episode with them last week, so if you haven't checked that out yet, make sure you go check it out. Make sure you follow us on Twitter at @all_in_pod. All right, guys, let's get back to the pod. We're going to bring in Dan Thiel and talk about some baseball now.
All right, so those of you listening on audio, welcome back. For those of you watching on YouTube, welcome. As you can see, we have a new guest, our guy Dan the Man, White Essien, has tuned in to talk a little bit of baseball with us. What's up, man?
What's going on? Appreciate another invite to the pod. Looking forward to it.
Sure.
Of course, man. So first time we get to talk baseball on the podcast, Mike. Baseball's finally back.
Baseball's finally back, so we haven't talked about it because it was looking really bleak as you know, the optimism for baseball coming back was very low. It looked like the players and the owners were just going to keep going back and forth. You know, we don't have to get into all the nitty gritty of the negotiations, but it was not done in good faith. And there was a lot of arguing. And, you know, finally they kind of said, well, you know, whatever, we'll just do what we agreed to in March. And Manfred implemented the 60 game season. He didn't have to make it 60 games. He could have done less. So maybe he's trying to show a little good faith there. But you know, obviously he's just trying to not lose that grievance that's coming up shortly with the players. So I'm excited. I'm a big baseball guy. I know Dan's a big baseball guy. I'm sure you're excited, man.
Yeah, I'm excited just to see sports again back in the U.S. And we've had some chats about soccer before, but you know, summer is not the summer without baseball. I think the real loser out of this, you know, is when they're going to come down to playing games in August and in September, and they're going to be going up against NBA playoff basketball. I know what I'd rather watch, and that's NBA playoff basketball. So that's going to be the kind of the unfortunate thing for baseball, you know, with all the back and forth and bad negotiation that was going on. It kind of soured a lot of people. And when they do come back, well, guess what? There's going to be better TV on. So it's going to be a real tough you know, a couple months for baseball, and we'll see if they can recover.
Yeah. And they had a chance. They really had a real opportunity to get a deal done quick, and they could have been the first sport back in America. All eyes could have been on baseball. We could have, you know, got to know some of these young stars. Cause I think, you know, And I just posted, I posted a National League preview on the website already. The American League preview is going to be up tomorrow. And I, what I did in it was I gave a small team preview, but then I gave, you know, a position player to watch on each team because I wanted to highlight some of these young guys in the league right now who are exciting to watch. Cause I feel like America does not know these guys, even Mike Trout. That's one of baseball's biggest issues. You know, that people say if Mike Trout was walking down the street, how many people would even stop him and notice him? So that's one of the things I want to highlight, some of these young guys, and they had a real chance to be the only sport back and maybe captivate some entertainment perspective from a lot of people that maybe aren't watching, and they failed. And now they're going to come back at the same time as basketball, and they're going to pretty much match basketball here up until the end. You know, last year and in the previous years, once football started doing the Thursday night football, and they had, you know, Thursday night football, college was on Saturday, Sunday night football, and Monday night football, baseball was kind of squeezed in this box of days that they could have World Series games because these people, everyone was watching, you know, really crappy Thursday night football games over the World Series. Well, now it's like, it's going to be really tough. And it'll be interesting to see how this goes forward, maybe some of these next CBA negotiations. But, you know, I am excited to watch, and I will be watching a lot of baseball.
Agreed. So let's get into the format here that they ended up going with. We get, like you guys mentioned, 60 games of baseball, 40 division games, and then 20 games against, interleague game, teams. So who do you guys think benefits the most from this? Which teams, if any, get the biggest benefits? We'll start with Dan.
All right. Well, I think the division that's lining up against the AL Central is the NL Central. And I think they get the nice benefit of having to play some of these teams that are in rebuilding mode, such as the White Sox, the Tigers, and the Royals, and having those games on the schedule. So I'm looking at the front runners of the NL Central in any order, the Cardinals, the Cubs, and the Brewers, and possibly the Reds. They're kind of an up-and-coming team as well. So any of those teams really have a shot to stack up some wins against the AL Central. Granted, the Twins and the Indians might be tougher outs, but, I mean, I'll take my chances against the Tigers, Royals, and White Sox, in a three-game series, or a three- or four-game series, which they'll likely have several of those once the schedule is released.
Yeah, I think it's definitely probably the NL Central, those teams. But even the, you know, I'm kind of hard-pressed when you if we're looking ahead for, like, playoff predictions, like, the Twins and the Indians are going to play, you know, 30 games, 10 each, against the White Sox, Tigers, and the Royals. You would think both of those teams could take 8 of those games against the Tigers and the Royals, and then maybe, you know, 6 or 7 against the White Sox. White Sox, you know, have done some stuff. I think they're going to be a little bit better. But you would think that they would have an advantage. And in the NL Central, you know, I don't know if the Indians and Twins have the same advantage when you look at them going against the NL Central, because I do think the NL Central has an argument to be the best division in baseball right now, with the Cardinals and the Brewers and the Cubs. You know, the Cubs are kind of going through some turmoil right now, but they still have a really, you know, solid lineup, I think. And, you know, the Reds are up and coming. Even the Pirates, maybe not. Maybe I'll get laughed about for saying that. But I believe in the Pirates a little bit. That's my team anyway. So, I also think that the National League West and even the American League West, those are a little bit weaker divisions too. I think the big ones are in the East. That's going to be the tough. That's where it's tough. You know, the National League East, pretty loaded. The American League East, Boston is probably not going to be normal Boston this year, but they still have a star-studded lineup anyway after losing some pieces. So I think that you don't want to be on the East Coast right now. West Coast, probably, you know, if you were in either division. And then if you're in the NL Central, you know, you're looking at the AL Central and thinking that this could work out.
I think the NL East is the real loser here because, you could have had that division go any one of four ways between the Phillies, Nationals, Mets, and Braves. I mean, any of those teams really had a chance this year. And now tag on some games against the Yankees, Rays, Red Sox, and – wow, it makes your schedule. I mean, all those divisional games were going to be tough as it was, right. And now add on those juggernauts in the AL East. That's going to be tough sledding. I think the wild cards are likely going to be coming out of teams not in the East this year in the NL.
Yeah, and the AL too, because they're going to have to play. You know, I can't see how the Yankees, Rays, and Red Sox all make the playoffs this year, and you know, because they're going to have to play against the NL East, and the NL East is going to have to play against the AL East. Those are two tough divisions.
Yeah. So as the resident Phillies fan, you know, this was not good news for me. you know, and I honestly liked a lot of the moves that the Phillies made in the offseason, you know, as far as personnel change and also especially the Joe Girardi hiring. But I think, you know, given the situation, we may have to really wait till next year to see results. So I agree. I think the NL Central, as far as divisions go, is where you're seeing the biggest benefit here. So you could see a team, I'd say probably like the Brewers, you know, end up being a surprise team that comes out and has a, you know, maybe not a surprise team, but as one of the teams that really benefits the most from a schedule like this. Yeah. So, you know, speaking of surprise teams, since we have this format, you know, Mike, who do you think is a team that could possibly, you know, maybe probably wasn't projected to make the playoffs before this, but because of this 60 game and this scheduling could end up sneaking their way into the playoffs?
Yeah. And you know, this is a tough question because we really don't know, because we've never seen this type of a thing before. This could go, you know, 60 game season. We could have guys batting 410 for a season. Who knows? Like DJ LeMahieu could bat 410. Like, you know, it could have a lot of surprises. You know, and there's a lot of teams that I think, you know, who were not playoff teams last year have a real chance. Even the Phillies, you know, I would have the Phillies as a team who I think got a lot better this year. The team for me, I think, is the Diamondbacks. I think the Diamondbacks have a real chance to make the playoffs this year. You know, they already, you know, and they're one of these teams, they're kind of like the Brewers, where they were able to rebuild without tanking, which is, you know, something that in all sports now, that's the big conversation, is how do you rebuild without tanking? Well, they were able to do it similar to the Brewers. They kind of find Ketel Marte. He's going to be able to come back to second base this year with the addition of Starling Marte from the Pirates. I love that pickup. Who else? They got Cole Calhoun as well. And then obviously Madison Bumgarner, you know, he's, you know, 30 years old now, but you know, if he can be anything like the Madison Bumgarner of the Giants run, they're going to have a lot of success there. So my pick to be a, you know, quote unquote surprise team, maybe make the playoffs. They're not going to win the division, right? I don't see any way that they can leap the Dodgers here. Maybe because it's a 60 game season, they could. You know, if they get off to a hot start, somehow the Dodgers don't. Maybe they could. But I do think the Diamondbacks would be my, quote-unquote, surprise playoff team.
And I was going to actually say the same team in the NL there. Okay. So, but I have a couple other ideas as well. But, yeah, absolutely, just to add on to that point on the Diamondbacks, their rotation is going to be, I don't know all five, but they're going to have Zach Gallen, Madison Bumgarner, Robbie Ray, and Luke Weaver. And that is, I mean,
solid.
To have four top guys like that. And then, you know, the AL West that they're going to be going up against, Seattle is on, you know, on a kind of a losing trend. You don't expect the Angels to be that good. Oakland and Houston could be good, and Texas kind of middle of the road. So it's not like they have some great competition on the other side where they're going to have a tough schedule. So I definitely agree with that. Just to think through like how this schedule is going to impact teams. You know, it's going to be a shortened season. Every game is going to have a even more importance. You know that the playoff stretch is going to be just littered with teams that are all going to be fighting it out in September. And so I think the teams that are going to be successful with a shortened season are the teams that are going to have a really deep bullpen and really strong starting pitching. I think pitching will play a huge factor here. You also think about when the season starts, typically in late March or early April, pitching usually has a bit of an advantage over the bats. The bats are cold. The weather is still cold. A lot of the hitters just don't have that rhythm yet. Well, if they've been working out regularly throughout the spring and summer, the bats should be ready to go. And they're going to have a couple weeks of spring training here. So I think the pitching really has to be on point. If you're going to be a successful team, you really have to have the pitching get off with a bang. And the teams that have the best starting pitchers and best bullpen are the ones that are going to be successful. Just like, to be honest, you know, in October when it's playoff time, those are the teams that usually have the advantage, teams with the best pitching. So a team that made the playoffs last year but is usually kind of under the radar, I'm going to say that the Tampa Bay Rays are kind of just built for a format like this. They use openers. They have really good starters that can go some innings. Blake Snell, Charlie Morton, Chirinos, McKay, Ryan Yarbrough. I mean, these are all guys that I just named like six guys that could be openers or starters for them. And then the back end of that bullpen is phenomenal as well. So even though they're going against, as we mentioned before, a pretty good NL East and a competitive NL East, I think they could be right up there in the wild card or even the division play right there, going up against the Yankees.
And just to the Rays, I think the, you know, they're going to do the 26-man rosters here. So I think that actually helps them, right? Like, and, you know, I think the biggest thing you would say against the Rays is they got rid of Tommy Pham, you know, for Austin Renfro. And I don't know if you listened to Blake Snell, did not like that trade at all. He gave his 2 cents on his Twitch page, and he was pretty upset with it. But, you know, Pham is – they're going to lose control of Pham after this year, and some of these smaller market teams, that's kind of just the moves they have to do. But yeah, like the expanded roster, because they could possibly be platooning at four positions this year, which is like kind of like not something we've seen since the Athletics made that run. I think it was in 2014 where they were platooning at four positions. So I think the expanded roster helps them. If I was going to give an American League team, you know, actually, I think the Angels could do it. I think that, you know, Otani is going to be a stud this year. And then, you know, Rendon could be a big addition. And with Mike Trout, you know, eventually they're going to have to start piecing some years together here in Mike Trout's prime, you know, before it's over. And they're going to have to do something. So, you know, shortened season, maybe they get hot. They would probably be a team in the American League that I'd be looking at.
And since you had already named Arizona in the National League, for my National League pick, I'll go with the Cincinnati Reds. Their starting three guys are going to be Luis Castillo, Trevor Bauer, Sonny Gray, and that's dominant right there as well. I'm a big fan of Trevor Bauer. I think you know, he's really into sabermetrics, and I really appreciate that about him. I think it's just a matter for him. It's just a matter of time before it all clicks, and he has this a phenomenal breakout season. I think he's due for that. And that lineup is young, and it's, you know, other than Joey Votto, they've kind of been rebuilding that lineup for a while. And I think if there's a team that can kind of break out in a 60-game window, that could certainly be one of the options there.
Yeah, they're like a big, you know, sleeper pick this year. This is kind of the second year in a row they've done some big moves in the offseason. They also brought in Wade Miley. They stole Pedro Strop from the Cubs, who, you know, even though they did lose him, I think the Cubs still have a deep bullpen, so maybe they're a team who could be a surprise. You know, they still have a lot of the guys in the lineup there. But, yeah, and the Reds too, you know, they got Nick Castellano at the deadline last year when they got Bauer. It didn't quite pan out how they wanted to at the end of last year. They also got this Japanese guy, Shogo Akiyama. I think he's pretty good, actually. I think that he could be solid as well. So the Reds definitely added some pieces in there. You know, Luis Castillo, I think, is a stud as well.
Yeah, and I think I like the Reds a lot too. I like Castellanos as well as their, you know, the additions they made to their bullpen as well. That was my sleeper pick for the NL. And, you know, I like Mike's pick with the Angels from the AL. So I think those are probably the two teams that could really benefit and be surprise playoff teams. So let's go in the opposite direction. Who do you think from last season possibly has a fall off this year? We'll start with Mike.
So this one probably doesn't make much logical sense. But Minnesota Twins. Okay. this is here's the case for the fall off this year. Well, actually, I'll make the case first for why they won't fall off. They were great last year, and they added Josh Donaldson, perennial MVP candidate. Here's the case for why they could fall off. Very, very reliant on the home run. You know, last year they broke the record for most home runs in a season. If they cool off for a month and aren't hitting the home runs at the same clip, that could be bad, right? And, you know, Nelson Cruz last year, they were relying on him a lot. Obviously, probably a Hall of Famer and a great player, but he is pretty old. Miguel Sano, he, you know, kind of had a resurgence last year. Maybe he regresses back to where he was before that. So I could see the Twins having a little fall off. They haven't had back-to-back winning seasons since 2009-2010. So they would be my American League team who could possibly fall off.
Interesting. What about you, Dan?
I'm going to take you back to the NL East and say the Atlanta Braves. They were the division winners last year. Really good core lineup. Love some of the young players there, but I just don't trust that pitching. It all seemed kind of fluky last year. And, you know, you got guys like Mike Soroka and Max Fried, Mike Fultonavich, guys that I just don't have a good feeling about repeating some of their successes of the past. I think they brought in Cole Hamels, and he just seems over the hill, well past his prime. So I don't have a really great feeling about the Braves this year. You tack on the fact that they have to go up against the AL East. That division was already going to be loaded in the NL East, and I think they're going to fall off.
So I'm going to say the Cubs. And not that the Cubs were, you know, great last year, but I think they had a big loss in the bullpen with Pedro Strop departing. So, you know, I think that could possibly, you know, be the team in the NL that we possibly see a drop off from. For the AL, it's kind of tough. I would say probably the Red Sox. Letting Mookie Betts go, I think, could possibly be, you know what I mean, something that hurts that team probably the biggest. So I'd say the Red Sox would probably be my team that falls off from the AL this year.
In the National League, I think my team would be the Brewers. They probably, of all the teams that made the playoffs last year, they probably had the most roster turnover. You know, Moustakas, Grandal, Shaw are all going to be gone this year. You know, and they're going to have a lot of unproven guys in that lineup. Brendan Woodruff will be back from injury, so I think that helps them. But yeah, I don't know. They're just unproven. Now, I think Craig Counsell is legitimately one of the best managers, and he probably will be able to steer the ship okay. But, you know, a team like that with some unproven guys, it might take them a while to kick on as well. So I think that would be my National League team who falls off. Now, you know, the Cubs – here's the thing about the Cubs, though. They have a lot going on. They, you know, a lot of turnover. Joe Maddon is gone, obviously. They've got this big arbitration front office battle going on with Chris Bryant. It's pretty messy in Chicago right now. So they hired David Ross. Now, David Ross, you know, obviously he's pretty much coming straight from being a player. We've seen that type of a move work before. It doesn't always work, so it's kind of – you know, a lot of question marks around the Cubs. I could see them going either way. But my National League team would be the Brewers.
And can we? I also want to mention just the concept in the NL this year of without having the pitcher have to hit and having the universal DH. That's going to help the deep teams. And we didn't really bring that up before, but certainly want to mention like a team like the Los Angeles Dodgers, already favorites to win the NL West, if not the NL. And they were just a team that was loaded with players that were going to be sitting the bench. Now they can rotate those guys in, get more at-bats for everybody. And that, you know, the deeper teams just get better. I do think in the Cubs situation, it does help because a guy like Kyle Schwarber that just never really felt like a natural left fielder, now he can DH and really get just focus on hitting and not have that defensive liability. So it's going to help some teams. It might hurt some teams that don't really have the lineup built to have the DH or have that depth. But, you know, sometimes, you know, not to bring up soccer here, but, you know, think about some of the changes made in soccer since the restart with the five substitutions. It really helps the teams that are already deep. And it's very similar here in baseball where the deep teams are just going to get a little better from that.
Yeah, and actually I will say, Dan, the Braves were my first pick here in the NL to have a little bit of a fall off. You know, they lost Julio Teheran and Dallas Keuchel. That hurts the rotation. But then they also lose Josh Donaldson out of the lineup. And he provided a lot for them. They do have a very exciting lineup, you know, with Acuna and of course, Freddie Freeman's MVP caliber player every year.
Albies, yeah.
It was a very exciting second baseman. So I like the Braves to fall off and the Brewers. But, yeah, like the Dodgers, it's like the cheat code, man. Like they've already got like an all-star lineup, and then they give them the DH, and it's like, okay, Jock Peterson can play every day now. Like, not fair.
Yeah. So that's probably going to be the most intriguing thing that's going to play out here in this season. And that's a great point, Dan, you know, is that having that universal DH and how that helps the teams with, you know, more hitting depth. So certainly have to see how that plays out. So let's talk about World Series possibilities. If there was a team that you could pick that's going to go to the World Series that isn't named the Yankees, Astros, or the Dodgers, who would it be? Dan, we'll start with you.
I'm not really sold out on this, but it just makes sense to me that they're kind of built for October, and then subsequently, I would say, built for, or I mean, outside of October, built for a shortened season, would be the Washington Nationals. It might be a struggle to win that division or even get to the wild card because there will be so much competition there. But that pitching staff is really made for October. You have Scherzer, Strasburg, and Patrick Corbin. And so, yeah, they lost Rendon. That certainly hurts. But that's just a team that got hot late last year, went on a nice run in the World Series. Can't imagine they have much momentum at this point, being that they haven't played baseball for so long. But if they can get out of that division and make it to October, I think they're built for a run there.
Would your American League team be the Rays then? I know you mentioned them earlier.
Yeah, I don't know if they're the type of team that I could see winning at all, but I could see them, you know, making it past the first round. AL, that's a tough one.
Yeah, when you have the Yankees and Astros, it's tough to take them out. Like, yeah. Who's really going to beat them?
Right. Yeah, I don't know. I can't see any team. I mean, perhaps perhaps if this is just based on pitching. If the Indians had a really good run, it's a little bit of a under the radar team, but they have a pretty good pitching staff that might be built for October. But I'm not really fully trusting their lineup now. But besides the Yankees and Astros, I mean, where else do you go?
So I think my National League team, you know, it's hard not to pick Washington because they are the World Series champions. You know. The first part in my piece I posted on the website is, you know, if it was a 60-game season last year, they would not have been in the playoffs. I think they started 19-31. They had a really rough start, and then they kicked it on. And, you know, their pitching staff is serious. So, definitely that would be the reason to take them. And we'll see if Juan Soto can really become, like, a superstar this season. You know, in the playoffs last year, he was just unbelievable. Really, the regular season, too. But in the playoffs, he kind of just – took it to another level and became a household baseball name anyway. You know, I think the Cardinals are a team that, you know, they always find a way to be in it in late September and October. And you know, looking at them last year, they won 91 games, but really, like, they didn't get the season from Paul Goldschmidt that they were expecting whenever they signed him away from Arizona. Yeah, you know, he's finished top three in MVP voting three times now. I think that he'll have a nice bounce back here. So, you know, they lose Ozuna, but they're going to replace him with this kid, Dylan Carlson, who probably is going to get like a little bit of a speeded up bump to the big leagues. They like him a lot. And, you know, Jack Flaherty is a true ace. And they play really, really good defense. And a lot of people might tell you that it doesn't matter that much anymore in baseball. But I think it mattered for them a lot last year when you look at the runs they saved with, you know, not a great pitching staff outside of Flaherty. They were able to compete So I would probably take the Cardinals as my National League team. And my American League team is the Indians because of the pitching staff and some of the experience that they have. You know, Tampa and Oakland are probably the next two on that list. I guess Minnesota. They did win 100 games last year. So, yeah, but that's tough to pick somebody outside of Houston and New York.
One thing I'll say about Cleveland, too, is having Terry Francona be their manager, that really right. helps when you get into October. A seasoned manager that's won it before and makes the big calls in the big games.
100%.
Yeah, so I'd probably go with the Indians as well out of the AL. Just, you know, for all the reasons you guys mentioned, the experience with the manager, probably one of the tougher pitching staffs that can last up in October. For the NL, I'm going to go with Dan. I think the Nationals, you know, I think just because of that, those three guys that they have, when you're talking about playoff baseball, that's the kind of stuff, that's what wins you games. But I absolutely, you can't count off the Cardinals. Like Mike said, they always find a way, and that's with them, you know, maybe they get the best out of Goldschmidt this year, you know, and that then that absolutely could be a scary team for the rest of the NL. So let's talk about actual World Series predictions. Who do we think's coming out of the AL and the NL, and then who do we have winning it all?
I am going to take the Cardinals, actually. I don't think that here's the thing about the Dodgers. So let's just talk about the Dodgers real quick, I guess. How many games did the Dodgers win last year? 106 games. They won 106 games, and then they add Mookie Betts, who I think is probably – I think he's the second best player in baseball. He's definitely top five. And they also add David Price, who's an experienced left-handed arm, who's got a lot of postseason experience. But here's the thing. They lose every year. So I don't know. Like maybe the shortened season helps them. Maybe the shortened season helps them, piece it all together. But, hey, man, you got to show me something. Before I call you a winner, you got to win. And I know that they're the odds-on favorite with the Yankees and the Astros. And Dan's got his Dodger hat on, so he's probably going that way. But I'm going with the Cardinals. I think the Cardinals have a real shot. So I'll take the Cardinals out of the NL. And the AL's tough because I do not want to take the Yankees. But I think I'm going Yankees here. You know, the lineup is just so star-studded. And assuming that they can all stay healthy, you know, Giancarlo Stanton can stay healthy and Judge. And you have LeMahieu. And we'll see if Gleyber Torres takes that leap this year. You know, they're going to lose Didi Gregorius, who's going to Philly. That's another reason why I like Philly this year to improve. But that'll give Gleyber a chance to play his natural position, which is shortstop, and have a full season doing that. So we'll see. He didn't look very good in spring training. If you were following spring training at all, Gleyber Torres did not look good fielding or hitting. But I think he's a superstar in the making. And then they just have so much star power. And then you talk about the pitching staff and how good it was last year, how good the bullpen was last year. And then they add Gerrit Cole, who was absolutely lights out in the playoffs last year. He might have been the piece that the Yankees are really missing. So my World Series prediction, I'm not going with the Dodgers. I'm going Cardinals, Yankees, and I think the Yankees win would be my prediction.
Dan?
Yeah, so I got to go with the Dodgers. This year, yeah, they haven't won it yet, but there's a time for it, and it's this yeah. year. I mean, they are just built for it. They talked about the fact that there's a universal DH this year. I think they're going to shoot through the regular season without any issues. They will be able to, you know, keep their rotation fresh because they could go a seven-man rotation if they really wanted to. They're so deep there. I know they won't. But, you know, Dave Roberts is the type of manager that he gets pretty innovative in keeping his guys fresh. He doesn't really have to even worry about this year because we're already going to be starting in August. He doesn't have to worry about Julio Urias hitting his innings limit early because his innings limit won't even be hit because he's only going to be going for maximum of 3 months here. So I just think they're built for finally going on that winning run in October. Yeah. I'd love to see Clayton Kershaw is just one of my favorite players, and I'd love to see him finally get one.
Well, he has had highly documented, very, very poor playoff performances. And the pitching staff, you know, they did lose Hyun Run-ju to the Blue Jays.
And Maeda.
And Rich Hill. I think they both went to Minnesota.
Minnesota, yep.
So, you know, but they are still so deep there.
Yep. Alex Wood, Dustin May, Ross Stripling. That's on top of Bueller, Kershaw, Price, as you mentioned. They're just so loaded.
Dustin May is the one I'm really excited to see.
Yeah. It's like a left – he's like a is he a left-handed Noah Syndergaard is what they're saying?
With his, man, that would
– Yeah. In the AL, I can't disagree with you on the Yankees there. The thing – they had a really good team last year without Cole, and they were just so struck with injuries throughout the year. They just couldn't get a break, it seemed. Finally seemed to get a little more healthy towards the end of the year, but then, you know, couldn't get past the Astros. Obviously, Yankees and the Astros are the two big teams that we would expect to be the favorites, and hopefully we will be able to see that in the ALCS this year. Something about Houston, though, that, you know, with all the, you know, with all the scandal that's around
Fuck
them. I think even though they haven't lost a whole lot on paper, other than Garrett Cole, I just think that there's just going to be a little bit more drama there, and they just don't have – they might just not have what it takes to get over that, you know, – you know, just all the attention that will just be on them for, you know, the next 3 months. I just think, you know, I could see the Yankees taking it to them this year. And it's, another thing with the Yankees, their depth there – Miguel Andujar missed a huge chunk of last season. He might not see regular at bats, and that's crazy to think that, you know, a guy that was so good 2 years ago, when healthy, might not even crack the lineup in most days. They have Gio Urshela that played really well last year, and then first base they can just rotate guys like Luke Voit, Giancarlo Stanton once he's kind of hopefully. For the Yankees fans, I'd say that he can finally get a clean string of health for a couple months. Aaron Judge has been hurt. He would have missed a big chunk of the season, and guess what? He might be ready to go for beginning of late July, beginning of August. So it seems like that, you know, the fact that we've gotten through, you know, 4 months or so where there could have been injuries might work right in the Yankees' favor, where they could just be healthy for a couple months and really go all the way to the World Series. So I'm saying Dodgers and Yankees in the World Series. And I believe it's the Dodgers year this year. There's all the pieces coming together. I love me some Mookie Betts. I love me some Walker Bueller. It's just a fun team to watch. And Cody Bellinger, I mean, he might be in the MVP running this year if he can, you know, just have a solid season like he did last year. So, great team, and I think that it's ready. They're ready for it.
And the Yankees and Astros, like, there's a lot of animosity between them. You know, they played in the playoffs the last two seasons, and you know, the Astros are going to be under a lot of scrutiny. And I think the over under for hit by pitches is close to 50 for these guys in 60 games. So. You know, they're going to be seeing a lot of animosity towards them because of the cheating scandal. And listen, I think they deserve it. You know, if you ask me my opinion about the cheating thing, I think they should have stripped the rings and stripped all the players and everything. But I hope that the Yankees are the ones that hit them with the pitch that sets it off. And there is a bases clearing brawl in the playoffs between the Yankees and Astros. Because if there's any team I want to see – beat the shit out of the Astros, it is Aaron Judge and Giancarlo Stanton and Luke Voit and Aroldis Chapman and Gary Sanchez. They're the all, you know, if you had to pick a WWE team of baseball players, they're the guys.
Absolutely. Yeah, you know, it's going to be tough for the Astros to get out of the AL, you know, without trash cans to bang on, things like that. So, you know, it's – I'm going to go with – I'm going to agree with Dan here. I think the Dodgers are just too loaded. And I think like a 60-game schedule really benefits Clayton Kershaw. Maybe, you know what I mean, it doesn't feel so much like playoff baseball at that point of the season because he hasn't quite pitched as much. So maybe
empty stadium.
Right, exactly. Not nearly as much pressure. So maybe, you know what I mean, he gets over the playoff woes a little bit, you know, with the, you know, the situation that they're in now. So, and then like that lineup with now you add Mookie Betts to it is ridiculous. So it's hard to pick against the Dodgers when you look at them on paper. And same with the Yankees. Now that they've added Gerrit Cole, I don't really know how you pick against a team that loaded when if you're, you know, assuming Stanton and Judge are fully healthy, still got DJ LeMahieu, guys like that. You know, it's hard to pick against either of those teams. So I'm going to go Dodgers and Yankees too. And I'm also going to take, I think it's finally time for the Dodgers to get one. And there's no better time than a 60 game season for them to do it. So I'm going to go with the Dodgers beating the Yankees.
So here's the thing. The Yankees and the Dodgers are by far the betting favorites to come out of each league. And, you know, I've been watching baseball now for 24 years. I'm pretty involved with it. If that means anything, it means that it will not be Dodgers-Yankees in the World Series. Maybe because it's a 60-game season, but it is rare. It is rare that the two favorites at the beginning of a season meet each other in the World Series. This could be different, though, because of how loaded they are. Oh, the Giants? No, it ain't going to be the Giants. It's not going to be the Giants.
Yeah. So, I mean, for those of you tuning in on audio, Dan has put on has swapped his Dodgers hat for a Giants hat. But
not in the dark.
I agree, Mike. I think, I think it makes it uncomfortable for me to say that, because not only are you talking about like the two teams that are most loaded on paper, you're talking about like two of the most storied franchises in baseball, two meeting up in the World Series. Like, that's just too good to be true, you know? So it's almost like you got to pick one of those two teams not to make it, which is highly likely, but it's just, it's hard to look at those teams on paper and say that team's not going to the World Series.
It's a dream scenario for Major League Baseball, probably.
Absolutely.
I mean, we talk in the NBA segment, we talk about how the NBA is pushing for Zion to make the playoffs for TV ratings. I think Dodgers, Yankees, that's gotta be a dream for Rob Manfred.
Agreed.
The worst commissioner in sports.
Agree.
All right. Well, that wraps it up for today's show. Dan, thanks again for coming on and talking some baseball with us today. We appreciate you spending your time.
Thanks so much for having me, guys. Can't wait for the next one.
Absolutely.
Yeah, man. Thank you. Mike, any closing thoughts?
No, thanks to Dan for sure. If you are interested in baseball, you like baseball, make sure you head over to our website, allinnetwork.net. I've posted our National League preview already. American League preview should be posted tomorrow. So check those out. I kind of detailed. I've got a team preview and a hitter to watch for each league. So make sure you check those out. Dan is going to be writing baseball pieces for us soon. He didn't tell me that, but I know he will for us.
If you ask me to, I'm good. Yeah.
See? So we appreciate his insights. So, yeah, and then make sure you're hitting the subscribe button. Like, leave a comment. Give us your World Series prediction. Is it Dodgers, Yankees? Is it Yankees, Cardinals? Is it Astros? Leave it in the comments. We want to know you guys' thoughts.
Yeah, thank you guys again for tuning in to another episode of the All In Podcast, featuring myself, Eli Cooper, and Mike Badzik. Again, for those of you tuning in, make sure you head over to the website, check out the articles that we've recently released. And for those of you watching on YouTube, if you haven't caught the basketball version that we did earlier, head on over to that one. Check out same episode, but check that out featuring Todd Fetzko, who was on earlier, for those of you tuning in on audio. But yeah, again, thank you guys for tuning in to the All In Podcast, brought to you by the All In Network, and have a great night.
Thanks, guys.
Adios. You know, man.